KQED.
From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Have you ever looked up something on Wikipedia, the collaborative online encyclopedia, and then wondered moments later whether you could trust what you just read? Wikipedia is incredibly extensive, with well over a million entries on just about any topic you can imagine. The entries are written by tens of thousands of authors, and that's the key. Anyone can write or edit a Wikipedia entry. In fact, maybe you have. In the hour ahead, we'll talk with the founder of Wikipedia about its astounding growth and popularity, and about the questions it raises for information gathering and credibility. Jimmy Wales, the creator of Wikipedia, next on Forum, after this. From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. In the past few years, a new word has entered our vocabulary. Wiki. Wiki comes from the Hawaiian word for quick, but it's mostly associated with a software concept, the concept that people can collaborate in the making of something. The ultimate wiki and the ultimate exercise in collaborative participation is Wikipedia, the online collaborative encyclopedia. There are now over 1.5 million entries in Wikipedia, and it's become one of the Internet's most popular sites. But what makes Wikipedia distinctive is its collaborative authorship. You don't have to be an expert or a PhD in order to participate. Want to create an entry on your favorite topic? Go ahead. Want to edit someone else's entry? Go ahead. There are a few rules about what you can post and what you can edit, but in the main, it's flat-out open season in knowledge creation. It sounds like a recipe for informational chaos, but according to a recent article in the New Yorker magazine, instead it represents a revolution in knowledge gathering. The founder of Wikipedia is Jimmy Wales, who says his goal is to make an online encyclopedia available to every person on the planet for free in their own language. And indeed, Wikipedia now exists in some 200 languages. To be sure, Wikipedia has its detractors, starting with the most significant concern. How can you trust something that just about anyone can write and anyone can edit? We're going to explore, over the next hour, what's behind the Wikipedia phenomenon and what it portends for information gathering, for knowledge creation, and for credibility. We're going to do that with a man who started Wikipedia, Jimmy Wales. He joins us this morning from the studios of KSFU in Tampa, Florida. Mr. Wales, good morning.
Good morning.
Happy to have you with us. For those who are not yet initiated in the ways of Wiki and Wikipedia in particular, let's just walk through a brief synopsis of what's involved. Let's say, for example, that I want to create a new entry into this online encyclopedia about a new program that we're doing here on public radio in San Francisco. What would I do?
Well, the first thing you would do is go to the website and look for a related article. It's usually the best place to start, and start by creating a link to the new article from there, and then you click on that link, which doesn't lead anywhere. And you get to a blank edit screen, and you can just start writing and then hit save, and there's your new article.
And there's no editor-in-chief of Wikipedia that I need to go through in order to have that approved, right? I can write it and post it.
That's right. And then as soon as it's posted, it goes to a recent changes page where lots of people are monitoring all the new changes that come in all the time. If it's a brand new page, it would come also to the new pages page, which is patrolled by a group of people who keeps an eye on new things as they come in. And from there, it would be integrated into the rest of Wikipedia or deleted if it was nonsense or lengthened, added to, expanded, and so on.
And presuming that it's not nonsense, that it is indeed about a new program on public radio, and now let's say someone looks at that entry that's been posted on Wikipedia and they decide they want to edit it. Perhaps it's a rival program that would like to sort of alter what's in that entry. That person can do that too, right?
Yeah, so as soon as somebody sees the entry, they're able to go to the top of the page where it says edit, and they click on the edit link, and they can go in and make a modification and save it, and then they're changed version is the one that shows up on the site. Of course, the old version isn't gone. The entire history is always there for every article. And the community monitors these kinds of things. And so if we see two rival groups edit warring will come in and tell them to knock it off. And sometimes we end up blocking both parties because, you know, we're not really here for people to fight. We're here to create a neutral encyclopedia.
Well, I want to come back to the oversight that is available through Wikipedia and the way in which you do go about monitoring it, because it gets into some interesting questions. But walk us through sort of its initial history, how it was that it came about, and what it was about this concept of collaborative writing and collaborative editing that so intrigued you.
Well, I was really inspired by the free software movement, or open source software. I was watching, in the early days of the Internet, or especially the early days of the web, the growth of GNU, Linux, Apache, all the really great software that runs the Internet is essentially all freely licensed software written collaboratively by volunteers. And I realized that this model of collaboration, using free licensing to establish the social contract among the participants, was very powerful and, in fact, could reach far beyond just software. Software, it makes sense that it started with software because if programmers want to collaborate, they can write their own software tools to collaborate with each other. For the rest of us, we had to wait until software was invented to make it easier for us to do that.
And why is it, in your judgment, a better way to create an encyclopedia where everyone participates and everyone edits than a more select few who have that sort of authority?
Well, there are a few different advantages, and there are, of course, also some disadvantages. One of the major advantages is the sheer number of people who we can get involved in the intellectual heavy lifting in an open project is dramatically higher than you could ever afford to do in a closed project. Of course, the open editing model also allows us to be incredibly timely and up-to-date. Things get changed really immediately in response to new events in the world.
Yeah, look,
of course,
for example,
the disadvantages. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to chime in with what you were saying. Our first hour topic was on the challenges now before Speaker Pelosi, and I happened to look up Speaker Pelosi on Wikipedia early this morning just out of curiosity on this point, and indeed it was up to date and talked about how she had been sworn in yesterday as Speaker of the House.
Yeah, exactly. So we're really good at things like that. Of course, the downside of the open editing is that Wikipedia is currently always a work in progress. So someone can come to a page and completely wreck it. Normally, if they are, engaged in vandalism or something like that, it gets corrected very, very quickly, usually under 5 minutes. But, articles can be in dispute for some period of time. There can be choppy writing at times. There are disadvantages as well, but they're, to my mind, clearly outweighed by the advantages in terms of this incredibly huge and deep and rich resource that we've been able to create.
I want to come back as well to the disadvantages question because that's a key one, but I want to hear more about why you think, in the end, a better way of getting at the truth is to have thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of people participating, as opposed to just a panel of people who all are credentialed and have PhDs or whatever.
Well, certainly people who are credentialed and have PhDs are an incredibly important and valuable part of the process, and that's something that we really try to encourage participation by as many people like that as possible. But it still remains true that an open dialogue, an open discussion, including, all comers, is a really powerful technique for getting at the truth. This is really what goes to the heart of, why we believe in the freedom of speech, why we believe in the First Amendment, that it's really important that we engage as many voices in the dialogue as possible. And some of them will be wrong and some of them will be crazy, but we've heard from them and we've taken into account what they've said and made our adjustments accordingly. To me, it's a much healthier process than to have a closed, narrow process just involving a handful of selected people who aren't really willing to go out and be challenged.
Jimmy Wales is our guest this hour. He is the founder of Wikipedia, the collaborative online encyclopedia. Now with what, million and a half? How many entries are
yeah, just over 1.5 million in English, but it's important to realize that that's less than one-third of the total work. We're really a truly international project.
And there it is, and now I looked up this morning in over 200 languages, including Basque, Kurdish, and Mongolian. So it really is something that is available in every language almost and all over the planet. On this question, though, of whether or not collaborative search for truth is in some ways better than a sort of more elite process. Is it in a sense then, in your judgment, a kind of checks and balances, that this is literally the sort of free marketplace of ideas where everyone gets to weigh in, and out of that sometimes murky, clumsy, awkward process, the truth outs?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. It turns out that the vast majority of people are quite reasonable. And in many cases in Wikipedia, we aren't trying to necessarily get at the correct answer to a controversial question. We are really more interested in presenting fairly the controversial question. So if there's some difficult issue, it's important to hear from all sides so that you can frame the issue correctly so that all sides can agree, yes, abortion, this is what we're debating about. And that's a pretty big step forward, even if, you can read an article on some controversial issue and we won't tell you the right answer. We'll tell you what different people have said, and it's up to you to think about it.
How does that play out then with things that I would think would be problematic within the Wikipedia world? Something like, for example, the recent conflict between Israel and Lebanon and Hezbollah, where you have such fiercely held positions and where people really don't see the truth in the same way and are very sure about their vision of the truth as opposed to those on the other side. When you have people literally sort of firing back and forth on that sort of question, how can you wind up with something that is truthful?
Well, those are very heavily edited articles, of course, but we don't find them particularly problematic in that respect. It turns out that, in fact, there's a very small minority of people who are so stubborn as to completely refuse to see that there are alternative viewpoints. And essentially what we end up doing is citing sources. So, if there's some particular incident and one side says it was a massacre and the other side says it was not, you can just cite both sides' sources. Say, well, so-and-so claimed this and this was the response given. And you really leave it up to the reader to sift through those ideas and do further research and come to their own conclusion. It's not really the right place for a neutral encyclopedia to take a side on anything controversial like that.
And walk us through then what the sort of essential rules of Wikipedia posting are. One of them is that a posting should be neutral, right? And another is that you whatever you say, that has to be backed up by some other form of publication, that the positions that you're putting forward live in some other verifiable way.
That's right, yeah. That's something that we've really had a big push on in the last year or two as we've gotten bigger and gotten more mature, is to really push to cite external sources as much as possible. There are a lot of social rules as well in Wikipedia. Assume good faith is one. No personal attacks. So we really try to encourage a healthy and friendly environment for discussion and debate with a minimum of flame wars. Of course, we're human beings, so it's not always a perfect utopia in there. But by and large, I think we do a pretty good job as compared to the traditional internet forum of having a safe place for people to come and have a reasonable dialogue about things.
But it sounds also like you're acknowledging that when you look up something on Wikipedia, you should really look at it as a work in progress and not necessarily think of it as being definitive. It's hopefully accurate at that moment in time, but you really can't look at it as the Bible of information. Is that right?
Absolutely right. I think that it's really a bad idea when looking at any source to surrender your own judgment to some authority. I think you really want to always keep a critical mind, be very careful about what you're reading, look for confirmation, look for other evidence. And also you can, in many cases, you can judge just based on the context and the type of claim being made, whether it's something you should be particularly worried about or not. If Wikipedia tells you who won the World Series in 1943, yeah, you can pretty much count on that being right. But if there's some very obscure particular detail that sounds sensationalist, maybe you better check it out.
Yeah, well, let's focus on that for a moment, about when can you count on it being right. Let me just give you a small and almost sort of trivial example from something that confronted me a couple of weeks ago. We were doing a program on the coming to the conclusion of Kofi Annan's tenure as UN General Secretary. and wanted to comment on who his successor would be, the Thai foreign minister, Ban Ki-moon. And I suddenly realized about a half hour before we were live that I wasn't at all sure as to how to pronounce Ban Ki-moon. And so one of the interns on our program looked it up on Wikipedia, and the answer was Ban Ki-moon. I wasn't sure that was right, so I asked another colleague of mine here at National Public Radio in San Francisco, Dan Dreher, who checked with NPR in Washington and came back with Ban Ki-moon, which is, so I then had this dilemma. Do I trust NPR or do I trust Wikipedia? So what should I have done?
I guess go with who pays your bills. I think in a case like that, it would probably be safer to go with NPR because they're in the business of pronouncing it on the radio, and perhaps whoever wrote that in Wikipedia was simply trying to be helpful but transcribed what they heard and may have gotten it wrong. On the other hand, maybe it isn't settled yet. People haven't yet settled in on what the correct pronunciation should be with an English accent. So.
Exactly. And I did, in fact, go with the NPR pronunciation, but it's entirely possible that the correct Thai pronunciation is Ban Ki-moon. And perhaps one of our listeners will call in the second half hour and weigh in on that topic, which is, in a sense, part of the beauty and the fun of Wikipedia, right, is that everyone, in fact, can weigh in. In fact, I suspect there probably is a listener or two going right now to edit that particular page.
Probably so. Well, I think that there is that importance of having lots of people participating, so that if that is an error, it probably won't last very long. After several people have heard the name, as it becomes more known in the news and so forth, if it's just wrong, people will begin to realize it. If it's a controversial point and it turns out that for whatever reason the Western media is pronouncing it in one way but the correct Thai pronunciation is something different, what we would normally evolve into there would be a little note explaining that it's pronounced in different ways for whatever reasons.
Let me ask you about some of the errors that have lived, though, for a period of months. One of the most famous of which that's been written about in a number of articles about Wikipedia is what happened to a gentleman by the name of John Siegenthaler, who worked for Robert Kennedy back in the early 60s, and one day came upon an entry about himself, a little bio of John Siegenthaler, in which it said in the Wikipedia entry, and purportedly he was involved in the assassination of both John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy. And that lived on in Wikipedia for 4 months. He wrote an op-ed piece about it, and obviously it got changed. But it's that kind of problem, and I know you're familiar with that particular case, that gives people a degree of uncertainty about how much they really should trust Wikipedia. So walk us through what the safeguards are that will now prevent something like the John Siegenthaler incident from happening.
Right. So it's actually worth understanding a little bit what happened in that case. What happened was someone had created a new article, very short, basically a one-paragraph article, that slipped through the cracks of the people who normally patrol new pages. So it wasn't placed into a category. It wasn't linked to from other places in the site. It didn't go into all the normal processes where things like that get reviewed. Once he notified us, of course it was fixed within 10 minutes, and then we not only fixed it, but of course deleted the old versions from the revision history even. Then some months later is when his editorial came out, and it was sort of a big noise. So some people have misunderstood the story to think that he had to write an editorial in the USA mm-hmm. Today before we would change it, but that's not really the way it happened. So that sort of thing can still happen. In this particular case, what was written about him was that not that he was currently thought to be involved, but that he was for a brief time suspected of being involved. And I think for a lot of people who don't really follow all of the Kennedy assassination conspiracy theory kind of things, it sort of sounds plausible that almost anybody might have been suspected for a brief time. As it turns out, in this case, it was completely false, and it was a completely absurd thing. And he's a wonderful First Amendment activist kind of guy who I admire very much. But that kind of error can slip in. There's no doubt about it.
But he also made the point that, speaking on the First Amendment question that you're raising, that his worry, in fact, was that this sort of error, these sorts of problems, would lead to regulation of the Internet in a way that he didn't want to see happen as a First Amendment proponent. So respond to that concern, that if you're not careful, if your volunteers, and they all are volunteers who are monitoring and keeping an eye on what is being posted, don't do their jobs well, that it will push people into thinking we've got to censor this or shut this down in some way.
Yeah, well, I'm not even remotely worried about that as a possibility. We do quite a good job, and of course there are errors in Wikipedia, there are errors in all media, but the current judicial understanding of what the First Amendment is about is really exactly, we're right in the center of what the First Amendment is for, which is to say citizen participation, open dialogue in society about what is the truth. That's really what the First Amendment's all about. And, we may worry about the First Amendment around some of the fringe issues, things like pornography or this or that, where there are questions about how much free speech do we have, how much free speech should we have. But the idea of an encyclopedia written by volunteers on the Internet, boy, that's core to exactly what it means to have a free society.
On the volunteer question, one of the fascinating aspects of how Wikipedia is organized is that it is a nonprofit. Your budget is startlingly small, a little over $1 million, as I understand it. You have 5 employees, and all the rest are basically volunteers. What's the importance of that in your judgment, that you're essentially running something that is done on a shoestring and by volunteer goodwill?
Well, I think it's really important to the spirit of the project that it's so volunteer-based. I think that's true across a huge swath of Internet media, in fact, not just Wikipedia, but the idea that, mailing lists, forums, other wikis, which there are thousands of, all of these things depend on ordinary people just contributing and pitching in and helping out and doing something useful for other people. Just because it's fun or they find some value in it. I think it's a really critical component of everything that we do. And in particular, one of the nice things about it is it really helps to ensure our editorial independence. People don't really have to worry about, suppose somebody makes a major donation to the foundation, is that going to impact how we write about that person or that company? Well, no, actually, it's pretty impossible for the foundation to do anything about it. The volunteers are very firmly in charge of the project. So,
Jimmy Wales, our guest this hour, the founder of Wikipedia, the online collaborative encyclopedia. And when we return, we'll take your calls on this subject. What do you make of Wikipedia? What are your concerns, if any, about them? And what does this perhaps portend about the way in which the Internet can function, the way in which knowledge gathering can function in the year ahead? We will take your calls at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Or you can email us at forum@kqed.org. That's forum@kqed.org. Back in just a moment with more from Jimmy Wales, the founder of Wikipedia. This is Forum on KQED. I'm Dave Iverson. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Our guest this hour, Jimmy Wales, the founder of Wikipedia, the collaborative online encyclopedia, and we welcome your participation in our program this morning. You can call us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786, or you can email us your observations at forum@kqed.org. That's forum@kqed.org. And speaking of email, this is truly humbling, but we're going to do our own version of instant editing here on live radio. Tom Tom writes in, I'd like to point out an error that was said this morning on the program. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is from South Korea, not Thailand. I, in fact, really do know this, Tom, but I apologize for the error that I said he was Thai when, in fact, he's South Korean. So you see, Jimmy Wales, we can do instant editing on live radio as well as on Wikipedia.
You know, I knew that too, and I didn't catch it. So it's just like having one writer and one editor. It's not enough.
Yeah, well,
and have more oversight.
That's right. And I mean, in a way, it really does point to the value of this sort of thing, that people can weigh in, and you don't need necessarily to be an expert on foreign policy or the United Nations to catch those kinds of mistakes.
Exactly.
And again, we welcome your calls to Jimmy Wales at 866-733-6786, or you can email us at forum@kqed.org. Let's go to our first caller this morning. Richard joins us from Penn Grove. Richard, go ahead.
Is that going to be it for you?
Hello?
I guess we're going to Kyle instead in Arcata. Kyle, go ahead.
Hi. I was curious about if you could tell from your aspect the story of the involvement of Ben Kovitz in the creation of Wikipedia.
Yeah, you know, I have almost no knowledge about that whatsoever. I don't really know Ben, and he wasn't really involved in the project, but I believe he's the first person who had pointed out the wiki software to Larry Sanger, who worked for me at the time.
I see, okay.
All right. Go ahead, Kyle.
I had another question. I'm curious about what you think about the use by politicians and other public figures of their staff in kind of editing Wikipedia to put them in more favorable light.
Right. Well, so we've had a lot of cases where we've seen edits come from the U.S. House and the U.S. Senate, also Parliament in the U.K. and the Canadian Parliament as well. And usually those edits are actually just like edits from anywhere else. They're people who are at work surfing for something and see a small error and fix it. Most of them are quite innocent. On rare occasions, we have seen very juvenile behavior. You know, someone had edited Jesse Helms' biography to say that he was 180 years old, which, of course, you know, he's at least 900, so we knew that wasn't true, so...
And Jimmy Wales, you've also been criticized in the past for editing your own entries. So you do have to be careful about that kind of thing, right? Because people can think that you're trying to sort of mask something about your own history.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. One of the things that we recommend in general, and this applies to everybody, including me, is it's just not a good idea to edit something that's too close to you. So that was nearly my first response to you this morning, when just earlier in the program when you said, well, what if we were having a new show and I decided to make an article? Well, probably you shouldn't if it has something to do with you or your organization, simply because of the appearance of conflict of interest. And also it can be an emotionally draining experience to sort of get into a flame war about your position in history. But in general, what we recommend people to do is if a politician or any famous person or their PR people see a problem in the article or they want to interact, the best thing to do is just go to the discussion page and be very transparent. It's an open, transparent dialogue with the public, and just say, we feel this article is an error, or we'd like to add this information, but we didn't think it would be appropriate for us to do it directly, but we wanted to point you in the right direction. And our editors really appreciate that sort of thing. They'll take it very much into consideration, and it's actually a very healthy way to approach it, because then people are in a good mood. They say, well, this isn't somebody trying to sneak in and twist history for their own benefit. They're just saying, here's some information. You know, we hope that you can consider it. And that's it just gets the conversation off on the right foot.
Some of our emails coming in. Ken in Sacramento writes, will Wikipedia sell out to a profit company such as News Corporation or Google? Will Wikipedia sell advertising? Interesting questions about sort of the business model aspects, I guess. How do you keep something going that's run really on such a small budget and based on volunteer help?
Well, several years ago, I donated Wikipedia into the Wikimedia Foundation, which is a 501c3 nonprofit organization that I founded. So far, we've had pretty good success in getting donations from the general public, and so we haven't had to rely on either single large donations that might make us dependent on one donor. We haven't had to depend on advertising. It is important that people do contribute. We're in the middle of a fund drive right now, and I didn't really intend to come on and pitch the fund drive. But
people are used to that on public radio.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It is something similar to the public radio model in that we are seeking corporate matching grants and things like that to supplement what the general public is giving. But I think it's important. If you believe in it and you think this is something you can support, then, yeah, it's important. If people didn't contribute as much as they have already, we would have had to do something else long ago.
But it is
a nonprofit, and we are committed to that, and we are a charity. And one of the things we like about being a charity is that it allows us to remain focused on the developing world and languages around the world. We can seriously care about Thai Wikipedia, which is quite small but growing well, even if there's no revenue potential or anything like that. I mean, I can't imagine News Corp particularly caring about that, but we can.
Does it also mean, though, that in some ways Wikipedia can't really function as a model for others? Everyone's obsessed with the idea of what's your business model, but in a sense, can you really be a model? Because you're based on free labor. You're based on volunteers participating.
Well, in a certain very real sense, I think that in some of my other work, I'm proving that it can be a model for business. At Wikia, which is my for-profit company, we've got 2,000 communities growing in parallel. We're growing faster in our early days than Wikipedia did, and we run advertising on the site. And it's a different feel because we're instead of just doing a neutral encyclopedia, which is something that people really feel, is a non-commercial kind of idea. People are building essentially magazines, books. It's basically everything else in the library. And, the most important thing about it is that it's still free culture. So, in other words, everything is still open source, all open source software, all of the content is under free license so people can do as they want with it. But in this context, it's about giving people something that they enjoy and have fun with and can be passionate about.
Jimmy Wales, our guest this hour, the founder of Wikipedia. We welcome your participation as well in this topic. You can call us now at 866-733-6786, or you can email us your observations at forum@kqed.org. Next to Richard in Pen Grove. Richard, go ahead.
Yes, and thanks. Thanks for the opportunity and a pleasure to talk with you both. Thank you, Dave. I just wanted to relate and say that I was a fan of this kind of free exchange, and that my experience with it in the past on two occasions that are virtually unknown in the public eye but might want to be, and how successful it was. One was at the actual reunion for Woodstock at Max Yasker's farm, not the Pepsi reunion, which was a disaster by all accounts and terrible reporting, but it came as a result of people being mistreated and misinformed and mischarged and untrusted and unrespected, whereas something you'll never hear about, unfortunately, even though there was upwards of 150 to 200,000 people there.
And Richard, are you making a connection between that and Wikipedia, that the same sort of philosophy motivated both?
Exactly, and just that when we trust one another, we treat each other with respect, we treat knowledge with respect, and we say, listen, this is what this is, don't think it's something else, and then don't charge or mistreat one another. We can wind up with a jewel which we all share and means a great deal, and it can be cared for in that same way.
Yeah, Richard, thank you. Thanks for calling back. I know we lost your call earlier in the program, so thanks for calling back in. Jimmy Wales.
Yeah, so this is, particularly since we're on the radio in the Bay Area, I can lecture all the web designers out there on exactly this point, which is, one of the analogies I've come up with is suppose you're asked to design a restaurant and you decide that since in this restaurant we're going to serve steak, people are going to have steak knives, they might stab each other, therefore we need to put everybody in a cage. We can clearly see that would make for a bad society. But unfortunately, that's exactly how most people go about designing social applications for the web, is figuring out all of the permissions models, everything, all the controls to lock everything down on the assumption that everybody's going to try to do something horrible. It actually is very valuable to design things in a way that trusts people, that you keep everything as open as possible. You leave yourself deliberately vulnerable, but also easy to repair. So that you elicit goodwill from people. You can say, yes, I can go and vandalize a Wikipedia article, but it's not that exciting, right? Because somebody will just fix it 2 seconds later, so why bother? Whereas if we had a very complex permission model, we would have a whole, you know, vast realms of hackers trying to crack into the system and deface the articles. As it is, yeah, deface an article. Yeah, it's kind of boring.
But in a way, that element of trust is important, but it also reminds me of that old saying back in the, you know, the Cold War and the arms race, which was trust but verify. And you would also agree with that, that you should trust.
Absolutely.
And it's sort of like the old journalism rule, which is you need two sources. So trust but verify.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, trust but verify. And one way to apply that in this context is, you know, we maintain transparency by keeping the history of everything on the website. So everybody can see what you've done in the past. Everybody can see the entire past history of a given article or the entire past history of a given person's edits. And that gives people a sense of responsibility. In other words, yes, you can deface the site, but you're going to look kind of like an idiot if you do, and it's going to be embarrassing, really.
Ernie writes in, how are Wikipedia entries on the same topic but in different languages apt to differ? In other words, something posted in English, Spanish, or Basque. Is there any attempt to resolve those differences?
Yeah, so they are independently written by different people, typically writing in many different languages. Just because of the nature of the world today, English tends to be the melting pot language or the lingua franca. So a lot of times what happens is people are constantly comparing, you know, English versus Basque, English versus Spanish, English, French, English, German. And then many people are doing cross comparisons, you know, German, French, and so forth. So there are people who take a look at that and find it very interesting to go and try to reconcile two different versions of some events. We still hear, you know, from time to time about particular interesting quirks where articles may be, you know, radically different in two different languages, and that's always interesting to hear about how that happens and how it's resolved. One of the fun examples is on the history of who invented the airplane, which if you ask pretty much any English speaker, there's no question that it was the Wright brothers. And if you ask any French speaker, it's, I don't know, some other person I've never heard of. Right? And so this is the way it's taught in schools in both places, and quite a different story. So once this was brought to the attention of Wikipedians, what happened is in the English Wikipedia in particular, and I don't read French, so I'm not sure what French says now, but I'm sure it's very similar. There's a fabulous article about the history of the priority claim in aviation that explains all of the different people who are doing different things around the world and why they have competing claims to being the first and what exactly the debate is about there. So that you can actually read that, and now you've come away with not the one answer or the other, but you actually have a full, rich understanding of, this is actually interesting. It's actually a complex question to say who invented the airplane.
So in that way, Wikipedia really allows you multiple versions of the truth. It really allows you to look at what might be, to most Americans at least, a pretty simple question, the Wright brothers, of course. It allows you a much broader array of possibilities.
Absolutely, and it allows for people in many different cultures to participate. Of course, the language barrier is still important, and so you do get interesting differences. There's a particular small island that is a subject of some dispute between Korea and Japan, and my understanding is the Korean article and the Japanese article are quite different from each other, and they've not yet resolved that issue. Although people have tried, and to some degree of success, as I understand, to harmonize the two to sort of illustrate that, here are the two competing things that people say about it, and the articles should basically read the same. But because people who are bilingual or multilingual can engage in this process just whenever they feel like it, there's always some input around the edges to try to improve things like that.
And back to more of our calls. Let's go next to Neil in San Francisco. Neil, go ahead.
Yeah, I have an old encyclopedia of about 2,000 pages, double column, small print, which is devoted entirely to ancient Greek and Roman culture and history. And are you trying to cover all the aspects of the world in this way? I mean, would that be your ideal approach? Or are you just getting mostly stuff about today's world? And how do you handle what are pretty generally agreed as bogus issues? I mean, for example, Holocaust deniers or flat earthers or people with wacky theories, you know, creationism, for example. Do you just accept entries from such people? How do your editors and volunteers handle such things?
Neil, thank you.
Right, so that there are two basic questions there. One is about the overall scope of Wikipedia, and the answer is yes, we try to be absolutely comprehensive, and we would like to cover all the scope of a specialist encyclopedia like the one that you're talking about, as well as all other issues. But we are aware, too, that we do have a certain amount of systemic bias in the sense that people write about what they're interested in, and we will have some really great strengths, for example, in technology, in contemporary technology topics. And maybe, we'll have a pretty good coverage of ancient Greece, but not nearly the level of detail yet that it would take, because it takes longer because there are fewer people who are really into that. You can on the Internet, you can find literally hundreds of thousands of people who are fanatics about the latest video games coming out, and maybe a few hundred people who are fanatics about the details of the history of ancient Greece. So it takes some more time for that kind of stuff to mature. On the second question, which is, what about lunatic theories or fringe theories? We have several good editorial techniques for dealing with that. So first of all, if we talk about something like flat earthers, then clearly we need to have an article about that concept, or something like intelligent design. We need to have a neutral encyclopedia article that explains who these people are, what claims they put forward, what are the arguments they put forward for those claims, and how have people responded. And then we also endeavor to try to sort out things like, say something like the evolution creationism debate. Well, we'll have an article about creationism, which would be essentially the neutrally told story of what creationists believe and how people have responded. We would have an article about the creation-evolution debate in society and what are all the social impacts of it. And then in our articles on evolution, we would keep all of the creationism stuff completely out of it, and this, for the simple reason that it's just not relevant to that topic. And if people come in and they try to start sticking in some goofy stuff in there, we'll just delete it. And, a lot of the articles, it's about a writing style where we say at the top of the article, in contemporary evolutionary biology, comma, and then we sort of say what it is. And if anybody tries to put some crazy stuff in there, we say, that's great, if it just doesn't go here. If you're going to write about creationism, it goes in the article about creationism.
Well, on that question, let's go to our next caller, because the question of science in particular, I think, is interesting in terms of how you look at Wikipedia as a source. And that's what Sasha from San Jose wants to join in on this conversation about. Sasha, go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to make a couple of notes and ask a question. I think Wikipedia is a fantastic tool. In particular, I use it for myself. I'm a scientist in biotech in the Bay Area, and I'll often look up basic terms or topics that in biology that I may have less experience with, and so it's a good starting point for me to look up a term that I don't understand. And then I understand that there can be inaccuracies in Wikipedia. I mean, that happens often in science itself, and the topics are constantly changing and being updated. But you can go on and verify the information elsewhere, doing literature searches, et cetera.
So, Sasha, is Wikipedia, in essence, for you then sort of a starting point, a first step, and then you go on elsewhere?
Exactly. If I'm looking for a particular term or I don't understand a term, I'll often actually Google the term with Wikipedia in the Google phrase, and I'll find the information in Wikipedia. And sometimes the information's there, sometimes it's not. And If it is there, I can get some information on it, and then I can go back to literature databases, et cetera.
Right. All right. Sasha, thanks. Thanks for calling and making that observation. Lots of calls, lots of emails. We'll try to get to as many as we can in our remaining minutes. Joe writes in, the biggest problem with the site is how most of the experienced members have learned to game the system to get their way. For example, there's a limit to how many times you can edit or revert an article. But this rule means that if someone writes something and another person undoes their work, then the two begin to battle, so forth and so on. That is one of the criticisms you sometimes read about Wikipedia, Jimmy Wales, that really there are a sort of a fairly small number of people who are actively working on it all the time and sometimes sort of engage in these side battles.
Yeah, well, I mean, in general, I spend a lot of time, you know, looking at these kinds of things and helping to mediate disputes and so forth. You know, occasionally there's a problem, but by and large, the very active users who are, you know, you could call it gaming the system. I call it being good editors. You know, that they understand how to deal with, you know, crackpots, cranks, and that sort of thing, hopefully in a gentle way. But, you know, it's very rare that we'll see a problem where, you know, an administrator of Wikipedia is being abusive or really trying to push a some sort of a perspective or point of view on an article inappropriately.
John writes in, as a co-writer engaged in writing about the art of a particular unknown artist, I believe in collaborative writing and cultural history. We love Wikipedia. Though we both have advanced graduate degrees and have both published small amounts of works, we have no secure access to the monster known as Graduate Academy. And Sebastian writes, Wikipedia often adds non-traditional flavor to a subject, lacking in more formal encyclopedias. For example, when shopping for a laptop last summer, I could read about the problems with Apple's new MacBook, written by persons who actually experienced the problem, not just by historians. And again, that speaks to what you see as the value of smart people writing about something, regardless of whether they have a credential.
Yeah, absolutely. And a big part of that is I draw quite a bit intellectually on a very famous essay by Friedrich Hayek about knowledge in society, where he really talks, and this is an old article from 1945, American Economic Review, where he talks about one of the problems with centralized decision-making or central planning is the issue he was really concerned about, is that the information that people have is really widely distributed, that there are you know, millions and millions of pieces of information that are way out there with all kinds of different people. And it's really hard to imagine that a central authority is going to have even access to that information. And so one of the great things about a very broad, open project like this is that you get little tidbits of information coming from all kinds of different places that you would have never expected. And, you know, that example is really a classic kind of example.
And to Marie next in Mill Valley. Marie, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the program. I appreciate learning more about Wikipedia, which I use and love. The question of the people who are monitoring what gets put online and how things get edited, are they the same group of people? Is it a revolving group of volunteers? How do they decide what's allowed to go on and what isn't? I mean, it is a certain level of censorship, which I understand the necessity of, but I'd like to hear a little more about that.
Marie, thank you.
Sure. Well, so we draw a pretty sharp distinction between censorship and editorial judgment. I do think that they're very different things. The people who are most involved are the people who are most involved. I mean, anyone can come and start getting active in Wikipedia, start editing, learning the rules. In terms of how do we decide what to keep and how do we decide what to get rid of, as it turns out, we have a huge number of policy pages which discuss, and these are all written by the community over a long period of time. And it turns out that we're actually quite old-fashioned. We're very traditional about such things. We're looking for things like, you know, are there good quality sources? You know, it's one thing to cite a journal published by Harvard and quite another thing to cite the National Enquirer. Although in certain fields of study, the Harvard doesn't really give you very much, and the Enquirer maybe does. But it's... it's really it's all pretty much common sense. I mean, if you think about what does it mean to have a quality encyclopedia article and what kinds of rules would you want people to be following, that's pretty much what we've come up with.
And do you exercise more scrutiny over those topics that are particularly political or particularly controversial? Are there different levels, I guess, of editorial control?
So there's nothing really formal, no formal distinction, because as it turns out, there's just a natural flow that makes that happen. In other words, if you've got a particularly controversial political topic, that's one that's going to draw the attention of a lot of editors simply because it's in the news a lot or because it gets edited a lot. And so it does turn out to be the case that there are far more people who have the George W. Bush article on their watch list to kind of keep an eye on it than would have, a fairly obscure and completely uncontroversial article about, Sacramento, California or something like that. And so it does happen that the more political and the more controversial topics do get a lot more attention.
We've come to the end of our hour, but just let me ask you finally, what's next? Wikipedia has mushroomed and blossomed in this astonishing way over the last four or five years. What do you see happening for it in the future, and what are you thinking about doing next?
Well, so for Wikipedia, I think the most important thing for us culturally moving forward is the languages of the developing world. We're having really strong growth in some parts of the world where access to knowledge is a much more critical issue than it is, in the wealthy, more developed countries. And then as far as what I'm working on next, I'm working on a new search project, basically applying the same kinds of philosophy and ideas that I've used in guiding the Wikipedia community to the problem of internet search, and I think it's going to be a pretty neat project.
Jimmy Wales, pleasure to have you on our program this morning. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jimmy Wales has been our guest this hour. He is the founder of Wikipedia, the online encyclopedia. Forum is produced by Robin Giannatasio-Mall, Hermione G, and Kevin Guillory. Our engineer is Dave Freeman, and the executive producer of Forum is Raul Ramirez. On Monday morning, in our first hour, we'll take up the topic of the future of California's children. A new survey shows that California ranks only 34th in terms of how well its children will fare. And then in the second hour, we'll preview a new series, new public television series about China. That's coming up Monday morning on Forum. This is Forum on KQED. I'm Dave Iverson.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.